Blog Talk Radio.
Dallas, Texas, on Tuesday, January the 29th, day number 29 of 2013, and we're about to get, it's already starting, but we're about to get a rainstorm here in Dallas that, well, I hope we stay on the air, that's all I can tell you, but it is black outside, and we're about to get one heck of a rainstorm here in Dallas, so anyway, as I say, I hope we don't get knocked off the air. It's happened before, so that's why I warn everybody that it could happen, hopefully not, but crazy things do happen when we get these crazy rainstorms in Dallas. Today we'll be talking about U.S. Latin America. We have with us Fausta Wirtz, Michael Prada. We're going to have a special appearance by Cecilia Torres, who's a great lady here in Dallas. I was with Cecilia last Friday when she made a great presentation about a new book from President Alvaro Uribe of Colombia, and I thought it was so good. I invited her to join us today and talk about that presentation. And then later on, we'll be joined for a few minutes by my good Cuban-American friend Jorge Ponce, who's going to be reminding us that yesterday, January 28th, was another anniversary of the birth of José Martí, the great Cuban patriot of the 19th century in the war against, or the colonial war, you might say, against the Spanish. So we have got quite a program tonight, and somewhere in between we'll be talking about U.S. Latin America. We'll be talking a little bit about Peru today. I really like what's happening down in Peru. A lot of good things are happening down in Peru. Just a quick thank you to the management of Blog Talk Radio for featuring our program today. It's on the front page again. And we're always very grateful for that. It introduces us to a lot of new people, a large audience, and trust me, hang in there with us today. Even with the rain, we're going to give you one heck of a program. We're going to take a break. We're going to hear from our sponsor, Avalon Professional Translation, and then we've got a great show for you.
Sending the right message in multiple languages is easy with Avalon Professional Translation Services. Avalon provides document and web translation in 62 languages. In addition, access to 140 languages is just a phone call away any day of the year. Events, even court depositions, no problem for Avalon. Call 972-404-1213 or go to avalontranslation.com. Avalon Professional Translation Services, global communications made easy.
That's exactly right, and we have a link to the Avalon Professional Translation website on the show information. You click on that, and it'll take you to my good friend Leonard, and tell Leonard that you heard about it on the radio. I'm sure he'll be very happy to hear that. You know, I'm looking out my window, and I'm just thinking about that song by the Beatles, you know, if the rain comes, they come and hide, what is it? They come and hide their heads or whatever. But it is coming down. Let's say hello to Fausta Wirtz. How are you, Fausta?
Very good, Silvio. And I think we're going to get rain here also, too.
Oh, so it's heading that way. All right. Well, if you're getting rain, then Michael cannot be too far from it. How are you, Michael?
Hi, Silvio. Hi, Fausta. Well, I'm here enjoying a beautiful day with temperatures in the 40s compared with what we had last week in the teens, single, below zero temperature. So it's a blessing today.
Michael, why do you spoil the show for Fausta and me? I mean, don't you know that she's, I mean, I'm about ready to put up my canoe, Michael. It's raining that hard here.
Actually, I mean, Silvio, you're the one who enjoys beautiful, you know, weather down in Texas. I'm the one who's envious.
Well,
very, very envious.
Yeah, most of the time we do have nice weather. It's either very hot or it's very nice down here in Texas. But anyway, just wanted to take a minute. As I said, we're waiting for Cecilia Torres to check in with us and to talk about this brand-new book by President Alvaro Uribe, or former president, I should say, Alvaro Uribe. But let's take a minute and talk a little bit about both of you. Fausta, tell us about your blog.
blogging at faustasblog.com and on American and Latin American politics. And curiously, one of the stories that has me most annoyed is the presidency of the CELAC by Raul Castro. And I haven't posted about that yet because I haven't been able to calm down myself enough to make a reasonable post on it.
you and me, Fausta. Yeah, you and me on that one. Michael, tell us about yourself.
Well, my name is Michael Prada. I am the president and founder of the International Center for Democracy, which is an organization that connects conservative-minded people around the world.
Great. Well, why don't we do this? Why don't we talk a little bit about U.S., Latin America while we're waiting for Cecilia to check in with us. Just out of curiosity, are you familiar with the book that I'm talking about, or the book by President or former President Uribe, Fausta?
I have read about it, but I haven't read it yet.
It's
I
a big book.
I ordered it, and I hope it gets here soon.
Well, it's a big book. Speaking of Cecilia, there she is, right there. How are you, Cecilia?
I'm doing fine, thank you, Silvio. How about
all
you?
Right. Doing great. I want you to say hello to Fausta Wirtz. You've been on the show with her before.
That's correct. How are you, Fausta?
Very well, thank you, Cecilia. Pleasure being in this podcast with you.
And I want you to say hello to Michael Prada, who is a young man from Colombia. And we always like to say that he's a young man, right, Michael?
Yes.
All right. Then he's been here for a few years. And as I mentioned, I was at a breakfast last Friday, and Cecilia was one of the ladies who got up and talked about. We have this organization, and we meet every Friday, and every once in a while, everybody's got to talk about a book that they've read. And Cecilia spoke about this book by Álvaro Uribe. But before we go anywhere, I've got some business I got to take care of. Michael, I want you to say hello to Betsy, because I know she's listening.
Of course, I want to say hello to Betsy, whom I love. I know she's listening to us and enjoying the beautiful weather down in South Florida.
All right, there we go. Now Betsy's happy. Okay, very good. Excellent. And for those of you who don't know who Betsy is, that's okay. We won't tell you. we'll just leave it a big secret. We'll let the listeners worry about who Betsy is. But I do say hello to Betsy as well. Hi, Betsy. I hope you're having a good time down in Miami. But Cecilia, why don't we start with you and this wonderful book that you presented on Friday. As I was saying, every Friday we have an organization here in Dallas called Grupo Internacional de Dallas. And we've been meeting for a long time, and I've had the great honor of meeting Cecilia and lots of other good people at that organization. And last Friday you spoke about this book. Why don't you tell us about this great book?
The book is called The No Lost Cause. In Spanish, No Hay Causa Perdida, which is a very appropriate name because Uribe has been fighting all kinds of causes all his life, and he has never given up on any of them. The book is written by him as a biography. It's quite interesting from the point of view that he speaks about what his feelings were and his rationale behind some of the actions that he took while he was president. And I don't know how much, I imagine Michael knows a lot about Álvaro Uribe. I don't know about Fausta, but he came to be president of the Colombia when, in my opinion, only somebody very daring will do that, because it was a failed state by then. He wanted to run as the candidate for one of the major parties, which traditionally had been only liberals or conservatives. Neither one of them wanted him. So he ran on his own and created his own party. His platform was Seguridad Democrática, because there were about 28,000 murders at that time in Colombia, 3,000 kidnappings, most of which were for ransom, so that the money will filter mostly to the FARC or any of the other guerrilla groups. And he made it, everybody loved his platform. People were so scared and so sick of being threatened every day from one of these groups. There was no peace. They were not going out, no even to the movies, because they didn't know what was happening when they came back. So he made it. He got elected by a big majority. And the day that he took the oath of office, they flew several, what do you call this? They made an attempt to kill him.
Yeah, say it in
Cohetes.
Spanish. What is it?
Cohetes.
Missiles?
Yeah, cohetes. You know, you fly these things that
missiles,
like the Palestinians do to Jerusalem. They fly these things and then they explode at the other end.
Right.
Well, anyway, the FARC did that the day he was taking the oath of office. In total, he has had 15 attempts in his life. His father was killed by the FARC, and he saw when they killed him. And although many other Colombians had that unfortunate experience, he really strengthened his resolve to do something for Colombia. He always liked politics. He had been through the mill, being a councilman, mayor of Medellin, which is the capital of Antioquia, where most of the narcos started, and then he was senator from Antioquia, and eventually all of the things that he put in place as being a mayor and the governor of Antioquia, he later on employed to improve Colombia, being that he will not negotiate with anybody any of the guerrilla organizations. He will definitely will not treat them with any deference. He will not give in to their demands. And he will establish a special tax to finance additional security forces that will improve the lives of the people. From the time he became president, he militarized the roads. Nobody would dare go out of their houses over the weekend to any of the beautiful places in Colombia, because they didn't know whether they were going to be stopped on the road by something that we call pesca milagrosa. They will stop you. These were mostly guerrilla groups. They will demand a ransom, and you will say, I don't have that money. But by that time, they had contacted everybody. They had people in every single bank. They knew how much money you had in your bank, when money came in and when money went out. I mean, they were the government. And if you say, no, I will not give you one pen, they will kill you right then and there. So people will not dare go out of their houses. They will stay inside. He militarized the roads, and everybody was free to go out, and they loved him after that. He established the same additional tax for businesses in order to improve security. And I remember asking my brother, who lives there still, why do you want to pay another tax? And he told me, well, it's cheaper than paying the guerrillas, because they will come every month and ask for money anyway. So it was either paying the guerrillas or paying the government. And they immediately accepted Uribe's offer. The book gives you insight into his character and his life experience. He never tried to appease any of these guerrilla movements. He thought that was not the way to go, and I totally agree with him. He also, narcos really fear most was to be extradited to the U.S., to be gone through the American justice system and stay here in prison, because when they went to prison in Colombia, they lived like kings anyway. They had all kinds of services inside the prison. They had internet if they wished to. I mean, they could buy anybody's influence from the prison. But when they were sent to the United States, that whole life stopped for them. They were a real prisoner, just one of the thing. So he said, no, well, if you continue this life and we find you, we will send you to the United States. He sent 14 of them to the U.S. to be to be tried here, and quite a few of them are still in prison here. I don't know when they will ever get out, and when they get out, where will they go? Yes, Silvio?
I was just going to say, did you want to say something else? Because I just had a couple of quick questions for you, and I'd like to have Fausta and Michael.
I just want to say that the investment climate in the country improved so much that today Colombia is compared to Chile, Mexico, and Peru. They are the countries that are considered the best in Latin America other than Brazil. And we have enormous amounts of foreign investment coming into the country because they consider that the climate, the security, and everything warrants for these other countries to invest in the country, and that has improved the life of a lot of people. They have moved from being very poor to being less poor, and the less poor to being in the middle class.
Right. Interesting. I just had a couple of questions, and then I'd like to have Fausta and Michael ask you a question. But what is it about Uribe that made him such an outstanding leader? Do you think it's that experience of having seen his father killed? I mean, was that the turning point in his life?
It may have been, but it's beyond that, because so many people saw their parents or other relatives killed, and that they didn't react the way he did. He is just one of those people that has an idea of what he wants and is going to pursue that idea no matter what, and he will work without stopping, because he never, in the 8 years that he was president, he never took vacation. Over the weekends, he will go to the little villages and hold meetings, and the people will come and ask him anything they wanted, and he will answer them. And he said he will do that, and he did it for the entire 8 years, because he said it will be the only way to stop the influence of the guerrilla movements with the campesinos and everybody, because they only heard the part that the FARC or the ALN or any of them will tell them. They never heard any other side of the story, and Uribe will go to these little places and hold court with these people and ask them. They will ask him anything, and he was just one of them, and
right.
That made him very, very popular.
Yes. We're talking to Cecilia Torres, Fausta Wirtz, and Michael Prada, and we're talking about fairly new book by President or former President Álvaro Uribe of Colombia. Let me give Fausta an opportunity to ask a question or make a comment.
Yes, one of the things you mentioned was that he was very able to relate to the people of the areas he went to. And I was also wondering, how did he get the politicians and the business people to go along with what his goals were?
Well, it was more difficult to get the politicians to go along. But the fact that he was so popular with the people, his approval rate was 76, 81, and things like that. I don't think there were many politicians that will quarrel with that, because if there is one thing they understand, is approval rate among the people. At the beginning, they tried all kinds of things to stop him, but he is relentless. This man, he has a goal, and he's going to pursue it no matter what. His safety was no barrier. His family, he hardly ever saw them, because, as I said, over the weekends he will go to these little towns and speak to all these people, never took a vacation. But that was his goal. He wanted to get Colombia going and be one decent country and stop being just a narco country as everybody knew him.
Right. Michael, you're obviously from Colombia, so you've had some experience here.
Yeah, certainly. Well, I have a comment and a question. A comment, I will say that I had the opportunity of meeting a couple of years ago some of the people that were very, very close with former President Uribe when he lived in Rio Negro, Antioquia. And one of his qualities, as Cecilia mentioned, is that he was a very, very hard worker, and he would do everything in the moment. He wouldn't, he, let's say if he was in a meeting with his ministers or with, you know, other governors, he wouldn't say something had to be done. He wouldn't be like most politicians, okay, we'll do that next week. He would like, okay, let's do it right away. And they will do it right away. They will gather whatever information he would need, and he will do it. And that's something very impressive about him. My question for Cecilia is the following. It has to do with, you know, President Uribe's legacy. Now that we have a new president in Colombia, how do you see the relationship between President Santos and former President Uribe? I know that President Uribe was supposed to go to the presidential palace to meet with Santos, and they were trying to, you know, work out their problem. How do you see that going? And do you think that they really have a lot of substantial differences between the two of them?
I think there are substantial differences. To Santos' credit, when he was Minister of Defense, he followed whatever was the policy of Álvaro Uribe, because that was his job at that time. But everybody thought, me included, that he was going to be a second Uribe, and he's not a second Uribe. He's thought much more he's liberal from every point of view. And when he recently decided to hold the negotiations with the FARC again, for whatever reason, I have no idea. He probably was, many people in Colombia said that he wanted to be nominated for the Nobel Peace Prize. I don't know why, because the Nobel Peace Prize has been so discredited that I wouldn't like to be nominated for that myself. But
yes, you're
Now he has, everybody thought they were very similar, and they are totally different. So thing that I wanted to say is that Uribe will give his cell phone number to everybody. If they wanted to get in touch with him, he will say, this is my cell phone number, and you can call me anytime, 1 o'clock in the morning, 3 o'clock in the afternoon, whatever, and they could call him. To me, that is so amazing, absolutely amazing. I don't know how many calls the poor man got at 1 o'clock in the morning, but I'm sure it was more than one. And he indeed will reply to these calls from anybody. It didn't have to be a minister. It could be just anybody he will reply. And if it needed to for them to take action, he will get whoever was out of bed and get going on the thing.
Wow. That is something. Let me ask you one last question about the upcoming election. There are elections coming up in Colombia. How influential is Uribe going to be in the next elections?
Uribe is still very influential. Whether he will decide to support a different candidate other than Santos, because Santos definitely is going to run for re-election, I have no idea if he will go that route, but he is still very influential. Although there is a section of Colombia that finds that none of the things that he does, I mean, they find fault with everything that he does. But these are the same people that I'm sure are very happy that they can say whatever they want now without fear that they will end up killed overnight, you know. They have all kinds of freedoms thanks to the dedication and the efforts of this man, and they don't like him.
Yeah. Michael or Fausta, anybody else want to get something in? Fausta?
I just have a quick question following up your questions, Silvio. Cecilia, do you think that, is there anybody that you think right now will be a political heir to Uribe? Maybe, I don't know, Germán Vargas Lleras. Do you see anybody who could actually continue his legacy?
Yes, there is a person that, but I don't remember his name now. He was one of his ministers, and he is a second Uribe. But the press has been trying to discredit him of late. Every single day they publish something negative about this man, because they probably think that Álvaro Uribe will support his candidature if he wanted to run. Unfortunately, I don't remember his name. I believe his last name is Calle, but I'm not sure at this moment.
Okay. And Fausta, did you want to say anything else?
In fact, he was the man. Excuse me, Fausta. He was. He had somebody attempted to kill him not long ago, this person that I'm referring to. About 6 months ago, there was an attempt to kill him, and he was only, I think there was an explosion in the car that he was, but he was only wounded. He was not, and not seriously. But they are afraid of this particular person because they know that he's another Uribe, and the Uribe will definitely fight for his candidature.
Right.
Yes, Fausta?
Yes, Fausta.
Any chances that Uribe would re-enter Colombian politics more actively, like in some form of, I don't know, councilman, Senate?
I don't think so, but in my opinion, he hasn't left Colombian politics. He's very outspoken. When he wants to say something, he says it. People say, why he's already gone, why doesn't he keep quiet? But no, if he has something to say, he just say it, and be that as it may, he doesn't care. He says things against Santos. He says, oh, one thing I have to tell you. He met Chavez when he was... Uribe was taking courses in Oxford, and Chavez had been recently elected president of Venezuela, and then he was invited to Oxford to speak to the class, and that's how they met initially. And he said they became friendly at the beginning, but of course, later on we know that they cannot stand each other.
Right. Interesting. Interesting. Now, the name of the book is No Hay Causa Perdida, is that right?
No Hay Causa Perdida, yes.
In Spanish,
in
of course,
Spanish,
the name
and English and Spanish editions came out at the same time, concurrently. So you can get it in either of the two languages. If you are interested in politics, like I know Fausta is, and probably Michael also, it is definitely a good read, and I would recommend it.
Yes. Well, it sounds like a great book, and I know it's gotten very good reviews. I remember a very good review in the Wall Street Journal. Fausta,
that's correct.
Fausta, I think you were the one who posted that I saw a review
yes,
in the Wall Street Journal about a year ago.
I had
I forgot to order it,
but I'm getting it. Hopefully it will arrive, I think, this week. I order it through Amazon.
Yeah. Well,
yeah,
Fausta is going to get, Fausta is going to get Alvaro Uribe's book after she gets mine.
Oh, that's right.
That's right. Okay. That's
Tell
that's
us about
right.
your book.
That's right. Well, we'll talk about that in a second. We're going to take a break. Cecilia, you're welcome to stay with us. I don't know whether you have time to stay with us for the whole hour, but you're welcome to stay with us. We're going to be talking more generally about Latin America next, and then we have a little segment on Jose Marti, so you're welcome to stay with us. But if you have to go, I understand.
I'll stay for a little bit. Thank
you. All right, great. Why don't we do that? We're going to take a little break, and we'll be back with Fausta, we'll be back with Cecilia, and we'll be back with Michael. And we're going to hear from our sponsor, Aaron Cleary, of the book, Worthless.
Parents, when you talk about your children, do you say, I can't wait for little Jimmy to grow up to become a stock boy? Or, I can't wait for precious little Susie to grow up to become a stripper? No, of course you don't. You love your children. The problem is you're unconsciously sending them down that path unless you have a heart-to-heart talk with them about what to major in college. Hi, everybody. My name's Aaron Cleary, author of the book, Worthless. Look, you or your children are going to blow $50,000 to $100,000 in tuition getting this degree. Not to mention, your children are going to spend 4 to 8 years of their youth earning that degree, and worse still, if they make the wrong decision, they'll not only be in debt, but they won't have a commensurate increase in their earnings potential, making them financially crippled for the rest of their life. This investment has to pay off, so ensure they choose the right major. Buy my book, Worthless. In my book, Worthless, I explain in clear language why some degrees are worthwhile and while others are literally worthless. We go over starting salaries, unemployment rates, but more importantly, the economics of why some degrees are better than others, explaining to the kids, not merely saying, major in this, don't major in that. You can find Worthless on Amazon.com. It's $13 in paperback, $5 on Kindle. I promise you it will be a better investment than college itself. That's Worthless. You can get it on Amazon.com.
That's right, and we have a link to Aaron's book on our show information. Just click on that. It'll take you to the book. I tell you, if you've got kids in high school, I think this is a book that you want to read. Now, maybe if you've got kids in college, it's too late because you've already gotten the bills. But if you've got kids in high school, you may want to read that book. It's an absolutely interesting book about what is happening with higher education. But more than that, the cost of higher education, which is just totally out of control here in the United States. Let's get back to our panel with us today, Fausto Wirtz, Cecilia Torres, and Michael Prada. And I thought we'd talk about what's happening in Latin America, and I want to begin with Peru, which is getting a lot of good press and looking very good, really, as a country to invest, as a country. I mean, Peru is a small country, relatively speaking, to, you know, Brazil and Chile and Colombia, obviously, and Argentina. But lately, they've been getting a lot of good press. So let me begin with Fausta. What do you make of that?
Well, Peru is doing a number of things that all countries ought to be doing. They have very aggressively tried for one-on-one free trade agreements. The largest, the most recent one is with the European Union. They also have taken advantage of the raise in prices and commodities, and they have new business deals with other countries and with other international companies. So the Chinese and Americans and Europeans, too, are importing minerals from Peru at the same time that they're maintaining a favorable business environment for the people in the country also.
Great.
So it's a very nice situation.
Yeah.
Much to my surprise, because as I mentioned in this podcast before, when Ollanta Humala won, I was expecting that was not going to be the case. But he has continued in the right track, so I'm very pleased to hear it.
That's right. That's right. Michael, what are you hearing about Peru?
Well, Peru, right now, as you mentioned, it's a hot commodity right now. Basically, in terms of size of the economy, they are the sixth largest economy in Latin America after, you know, Brazil, Mexico, Colombia. Then you have Chile, and then you have Peru. Their size of the economy is roughly about $200 billion GDP, and they have a GDP per capita of $10,500. They are growing exponentially right now. They are projecting they're going to grow anywhere between 6.5% to 7% in the first quarter this year in 2013, which is huge. It's outpassing the growth, or the estimated growth, rather, of Brazil. Brazil was supposed to grow at a rate of 6%. Right now, the Brazilians are reviewing their predictions, and they're saying they're going to grow perhaps anywhere between 4.5% and 5%. So now Peru is growing lower, larger. And one of the reasons is that Peru benefits from its very strong neighbors, in particular Chile and Colombia. Both of these nations, they have companies that are based, you know, in their home countries. They open, offices in Peru, and that promotes the growth. And I think they have in a very, very privileged position right now. As a result, the Peruvian currency, the sol, it's, you know, rising up in price. So the government is stepping in and is trying to keep their currency, you know, lower, which benefits, you know, their industry when it comes to exporting. And, you know, they are trying to do the same thing that the Chinese people are doing, basically trying to keep their currency lower. And actually yesterday here in New York City, a Peruvian organization that, you know, dedicates to promote Peru were the ones that opened, you know, the session in Wall Street. So Peru is, as I mentioned, it's a hot commodity. There were a couple of articles in the Wall Street Journal that recommended Peru as one of the top destinations for, you know, American retirees to go to. And the country is growing exponentially. Now, they also have, unfortunately, are having the resurgence of Sendero Luminoso, Lightning Path, the terrorist organization, the terrorist guerrilla organization that was almost exterminated by Fujimori. But other than that, they are in a very, very good and strong place.
Interesting. And like Fausta, you know, I was concerned that the government would go left, but apparently it has not gone in that direction. Now, Michael, I'm going to get a bunch of nasty emails because you forgot to mention Argentina when you were talking about the big economy.
I'm sorry. I knew I forgot. Yeah, Argentina is the fourth largest economy.
Yeah, but let me just caution you about something. There is one country that you can never overlook in Latin America, because the emails are going to be nasty. When you forget Argentina, they get nasty. Okay? So I just wanted to let you know that don't ever do that if you want to protect your life. You can do it to any other country, but you do it to Argentina, and they get nasty. They get
very
nasty. But anyway, well, let's talk about something else happening in Latin America, and then we'll bring Cecilia into this one. Raúl Castro is visiting Chile, and Fausta, I know we talked off the air that you're really happy about that, right?
Oh, I am absolutely besides myself. This is a grouping, CELAC, a grouping of Latin American and Caribbean countries. These countries are supposed to stand for democracy. It's called the Community of Latin American and Caribbean States in English, and it is unbelievable for me to be reading in the newspapers that Raúl Castro is now the president of the CELAC, because this man killed people out of his own hand in Cuba, and he's still killing people in concentration camps and taking political prisoners and abusing the ladies in white when they demonstrate peacefully. It's like words fail me.
Right. No, I know. I know what you mean. I don't get these other leaders of Latin America, how they do that. But, Cecilia, did you want to say anything about Raúl going down to Chile?
Well, I want to say that the organization is a UN organization that was created many, many years ago. And as all UN organizations, you never know why they elect these people that are the head of the organization for 1, 2, or 3 years. But when you consider that Gaddafi was, or the representative of Libya, was the head of the Human Rights Council at the UN, then why should you be surprised that Raúl Castro is in Chile right now participating in a meeting of this other organization?
Yeah.
It doesn't surprise me at all. It doesn't surprise me at all.
Right. Yeah, well, I guess you're right, Cecilia. Wasn't Iran also in a UN committee about women's rights or something?
Yes.
I remember something like that.
Yes.
Yeah, that was pretty crazy. Well, Michael, any thoughts on Raúl Castro down in Chile?
Well, I am as outraged as, you know, Fausta is. It's ridiculous. Again, this, you know, goes back to the lack of leadership we have had for the past 4 or 5 years, in which America has retreated and, you know, left its role in the region. Now, you know, Chavez has created, I think, 3 or 4 regional organizations, and somehow, even though he's utterly sick, somehow he found a way to either dictate or write, you know, a letter that was read by his vice president before all the other leaders. And something that's actually very interesting is that, you know, Angela Merkel, you know, the German chancellor, she, in an event, she actually ignored and dissed Raúl Castro. She, you know, she passed by him and didn't even acknowledge him or greet him. So I think that, you know, that will, you know, make us feel a little bit better, you know, from the fact that Cuba is now the president of the FLAC.
Yeah. I was going to ask you, Fausta, what's the latest on Hugo Chavez's health?
He's resting comfortably, I'm sure. That's
well,
the
he
thing.
You were looking
for... We really don't know.
Yeah, no, I know. I know you're exactly right. But you were looking for a plumber the other day, Fausta, and I said you should contact Raúl Castro's or Hugo Chavez's doctors, because they've been keeping his, you know, his body running there for several weeks, so they must be doing some good plumbing work on Hugo Chavez. So that's what about you, Michael? What are you hearing about Hugo Chavez's health?
Well, I think the thing is going, like, it's utterly ridiculous. Now they're saying that he has, you know, improved, and he finally overcame this, you know, respiratory infection that he had, but he's continuing to ail, you know, and to, you know, improve his health. I don't think they know what else to come up with. I mean, it's just excuse after excuse after excuse, and he's been out of the country for, like, what? It's going to be 2 months next week, which is utterly ridiculous, and it's a violation of the Venezuelan constitution. He at least should request a temporary, you know, license to be out of the country for 180 days instead of, you know, being used out of power for so long. And nothing else has been said. Evo Morales, actually, which is something that I forgot to mention the last time we spoke, Evo Morales went to Havana. We all know that. And in Havana, he said something that, you know, long life to, you know, the coca plant, and death to the gringos. That's one of the first things he said. And he said that he spoke with Chavez and that Chavez is going to return pretty soon to Caracas. So we will see what happens in that regard. And I think that what's keeping him alive is that, you know, that very famous cable, you know, internet cable that goes from Venezuela to Cuba, because there is no other explanation.
Yeah, no, that's truly amazing. Let's bring into our panel my good friend Jorge Ponce, also from the D.C. area. How are you, Jorge?
Hey, doing great. I'm very happy.
Yeah, I was just going to say that. I was going to ask you about the weather, but I think you know some of the – I think you know Fausta Wirtz, don't you, Jorge?
I don't.
Okay, Fausta Wirtz, Michael Prada, and Cecilia Torres. Jorge Ponce, like me, was born in Cuba and raised here in the United States, and we met through some articles that he wrote. But we're talking about Hugo Chavez. Do you have any information about him, Jorge?
Well, I'm waiting for him to pass away so I can have a glass of champagne to celebrate.
Okay. Well, you and me, right? But I wanted to bring Jorge on our show today because yesterday was an important date in Cuban history, and that is the birth of Jose Martí. And Jose Martí, of course, the great patriot of the 19th century and in many ways still revered by both sides, by people in Cuba and by the Cubans in the United States. And yesterday would have been, he was born in 1853, right? So that would have made him 160, I guess. But why do you think, Jorge, we should, well, tell me about the weather. You were going to tell me about the weather. I forgot about that. Tell me about the weather.
The weather is wonderful. All the snow that we had has melted, and we are waiting for the spring.
Okay. All right. Well, that's a good thing. That's in Washington, D.C., right?
That's in Washington, D.C., right.
Wow. Very good. Now, tell me what.
Now, let's go back to Jose Martí.
Yes.
Jose Martí, in Cuban history, is someone who is comparable to Thomas Jefferson in the United States. He was the big thinker, an organizer. You know, when he was in New York and then in Key West, he founded the Cuban Revolutionary Party. And he gave a lot of speeches and wrote a lot of newspaper articles that really turned the tide for the Cubans living in the United States, as well as some American politicians to help the Cuban quest for independence from Spain. Last time that we talked about Martí was last year, Silvio, and you wanted to know what university in Spain Martí had obtained his law degree. And so I looked that up, and he graduated from the University of Zaragoza.
Oh, I didn't know that. Okay, that's interesting. Well, let me ask the ladies a question. And I think we lost Michael. He's probably going to redial. Let me ask Cecilia first. Cecilia, when you were in Colombia growing up, did you know that much about Jose Martí?
Not really. Just that he had been instrumental in the independence of Cuba, but that's about it. Not much more than that.
Yeah. And were you familiar with some of his writings?
No.
No? How about you, Fausta?
I actually did, because at that time there were a number of Cuban girls in my school, and they would make reports. And I also had a Cuban history teacher who mentioned Martí on occasion, plus the fact that, this is going to tell you how old I am, the song Guantanamera was a big hit back in those days.
By the Sandpipers, you mean? The
yes.
Version? Okay, that's...
Martí lyrics.
Yeah, that's right. That's those are Jose Marti lyrics. Although, Jorge, I think we talked about this one time, that the original Guantanamera is not based on Jose Marti lyrics. That was done later, right?
No. The lyrics to Guantanamera have always come from Marti's poems, the versos libres, and the musician Joseito Fernandez then incorporated them into the song. The sandpiper is a much later development.
Right. Yeah. But the sandpipers actually, that was totally different. That was in the mid '60s, late '60s here in the United States, and that was actually a song based on a song that Pete Seeger had arranged from Guantanamera. Sadly, Guantanamera became almost a left-wing song. It became kind of a freedom fighter kind of song, but it was adopted by the left, and it became kind of an anti-war song in the 1960s.
Two things about Guantanamera that, it's been overplayed. When I tell someone that I'm Cuban and I'm attending a dance, and I ask them to play something Cuban, automatically they play Guantanamera. So I have to tell them, mix it up a little bit.
Right.
And the second thing is when I tell them that I'm Cuban, first thing they want to know is, well, what's going to happen after the Castros leave?
Right.
And, they've asked me so many times that I have a canned answer. And it's like when I give them an answer, they're so surprised that they don't have any follow-up or no more questions.
What's your answer?
The answer is that their guess is as good as mine, and I am sure the Department of Defense has come up with some contingency plans to deal with those scenarios.
Jorge, what you ought to tell them is, when they ask you that question, you ought to tell them that we'll dance Guantanamera on the day that Castro collapses. that would be the best answer. But just one more quick question, and then we'll have to wrap up. But why do you think it matters to Cuban Americans like you and I, and why is Marti such an important part? Why do we remember him?
All right, there are three things that I want to highlight. The first one is that Marti lived outside of Cuba most of his life. He lived in Spain, then he lived in New York, and in Mexico, then in other South American and Central American countries. That's one. Two, his father was a Spaniard from Valencia. His mother was from the Canary Islands. His father fought with the Spaniards, and yet Jose Marti fought with the Cuban troops. And so I think that there's a lesson to be learned here, especially the Cuban Americans who have lived and being born in the United States, that they tend to forget their roots, where they come from. Well, Marti never forgot where he came from. So that's the first important lesson. Number two is that during the time that Marti was growing up, there were three lines of thought as to the future of Cuba. The first camp wanted Cuba to become a state of the United States. The second camp wanted Cuba to become a state of Spain. And the third camp wanted Cuba to be fully independent. Marti sided with the independent movement, which has relevance, for example, to discussions about the future of Puerto Rico. Similar discussions. And the third point that I wanted to make is that the Cuban government officials have taken ownership of Jose Marti for their communist cause. And if you read Marti, if you read history books and biographies of Jose Marti and you read some of his writings, you would reach the conclusion very quickly that if Marti was still living nowadays, he would be calling for an insurrection against the Cuban government. And there's one quotation that I like to cite as an example that Marti stood for freedom. And it goes like this. He says, like bones to the human body, comma, the axle to the wheel, the wing to the bird, and the air to the wing. So is liberty the essence of life. Whatever is done without it is imperfect.
Right.
So, you know, if you look at quotations and famous sayings of Marti, you would see that, you know, the Cuban government officials are using José Martí usually for their own propaganda that they export overseas.
Right. Well, also, they always, you know, they'll always point out some anti-American or anti-imperialism remark or lyric, and they'll say that against the United States. But I think you're exactly right. I think that is the lesson that I've learned of José Martí, that freedom is what matters, and I think you're exactly right. If Martí was alive today, he would be totally against the communist dictatorship in Cuba. Well, that's going to do it for today, folks. We're going to have to wrap it up. I want to thank Cecilia Torres for joining us and her contribution of on this book by President Álvaro Uribe. Cecilia, thank you very much for that. That was a very good contribution. Great book. I plan to read it.
You're welcome, and it was my pleasure.
All right, and we'll have you back. You got to read another book, and then we'll bring you back.
Silvio?
You're going to read my book? Okay, well, that's a good thing. That's a good thing.
Silvio, one more thing.
Yes, go ahead. Go ahead.
It would really make my day if all those people who wear Che Guevara's T-shirts without knowing that Che Guevara was anti-American, they would really make my day if they switch Che Guevara T-shirts with José Martí T-shirts.
Yes, well, I would agree with you on that. It would make my day if all those people wearing Che Guevara T-shirts would have indigestion. Okay, that's what I would say. Well, Fausta, thank you very much for joining us, as always. It was a real pleasure to have you on, and Jorge Ponce, thank you very much as well for joining us today. Thank you to everyone for being a part of our show today.
Thank you very much, Silvio.
All right. Good night, Fausta. Good night, Jorge, and good night, Cecilia. We're gonna take a break, and we'll be right back. Silvio Cantu in Dallas, Texas. Thank you so much for listening to our show today. We do these U.S. Latin American shows at least. We like to do them once a week. We sometimes don't make it once a week, but at least I like to try once a week because there's always something going on, of course, in Latin America. Today we talked with Cecilia Torres. She gave us an excellent book report on the new book by former President Álvaro Uribe of Colombia, a book that is doing quite well here in the United States, a book that is available in English and Spanish. In Spanish, it's called No Hay Causa Perdida. In English, it's called No Lost Causes. A very interesting book that I plan to read. And we thank Cecilia Torres for her presentation. Then, of course, we heard from Michael Prada and from Fausta Words. We talked a little bit about Peru and what's happening in Peru. Peru is really turning things around. I mean, there are one of the great success stories of Latin America. Not a big country, but definitely one of the success stories. And they're doing it because they're implementing good policies. I mean, they're implementing free market policies. and they're making Peru a very attractive place to do business. Now, I thought that Michael had a very good point about Peru. He said that one of the benefits of Peru is that they have very strong neighbors, and that is true. I mean, economically speaking, that is. They have a strong neighbor in Chile and a very strong neighbor in Colombia when it comes to the economy. So that's a good point by Michael as well. Now, we also, of course, finished with our good friend Jorge Ponce, who gave us a look back at the life and times of José Martí, who was born in 1853. He was killed, of course, in 1895. And we will do more shows, probably do another show about Martí as we get closer to the 20th of May, which is, of course, Cuban Independence Day. So we'll focus more on José Martí and Cuba as we get closer to that day. But I did want to take at least a segment today and remind everyone that he was born in 1853 on the 28th of January, a very important date in Cuban history. And one of the things that I think Jorge is exactly right, one of the things that makes José Martí so relevant is that so much of what he wrote about and so much of what he said was about freedom. And that is exactly the way we have to think of him. We have to think of him as a man who believed in freedom. He never believed in dictatorship, and I think my friend Jorge is exactly right. If Martí was alive today, he would be probably in a Cuban political prison if he was in the island, or he definitely would be outside of Cuba preaching for the end of the Castro dictatorship. Everybody have a great day. We're about to get some rain. We didn't get it, but I know we're going to get it today because the skies are very dark here in Dallas. Everybody have a wonderful day. And this is Silvio Canto, and we'll talk to you later.